Honorable members, we now have Ms. Yolisa Keda. Ms. Kedama, this is the subcommittee that has been appointed by the Portfolio Committee on Communication, as allowed by the rules of the National Assembly. So I'm the chair of the committee, as you can see. I will quickly introduce the other members. We just had a member here who is struggling to cope with the aircon from his point of view, but he'll be joining in the time. If it doesn't, we'll still continue though. We have Honorable Kubeka. Honorable Mulala, we have Honorable Machozi, and Honorable Faku, that's Honorable Fanda. As I said, we had Honorable Tandozi, who is still having an issue with regards to the record. Maneli, that's myself. Will now afford you an opportunity to introduce yourself briefly and then get to the presentation that you need to make to the committee, which will maximum 10 minutes. Thereafter, we'll have members to interact with you, 5 minutes max for a member to interact with you, which includes the answers that you'll give. So in that score, that's how we are going to run. I'm sure if you are ready, we would now hand over to you. As I said, to introduce yourself to everyone and then get to the presentation on the topic that you have chosen.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Yolisa Kedama. I've chosen the second topic as part of this presentation, the one that talks to the brief analysis of the status quo in the country. Okay, just to give a quick overview of my presentation, I've just touched briefly on the history of regulation in South Africa, and I've chosen the second question like I've already mentioned. So if we quickly look at the acts regulating the industry in the country, we have the IBA Act that established the Broadcasting Act, the Broadcasting Regulator, and we had the Telecoms Act that established SATRA then, and then the Postal Services Act. Then in 2000 we had the ICASA Act after SATRA and IBA were merged, and we have the EC Act that that was promulgated as part of the convergence era. So now getting to the actual issues addressed in this presentation, we looking at the analysis of the converged regulation versus the single sector regulation. On the right side of this box, we have the history where IBA and SATRA were sector-specific regulators. I've put in the information regulator because of where we are between single converged and getting into the digital era. So if we look at the converged regulation, what were the results or what are the issues that we're trying to address? Is it the opening up of the market, competition being introduced, or is it a question of the overlaps between the two sectors or three or multi-sectors? The issue of similar characteristics with the different regulators, or the regulating sector, specific sectors, was it an issue of weak institutions or capacity constraints or convergence in technologies? As I've already mentioned, the status quo is such that we have the so-called converged regulation, converged regulator, which is ICASA. So when the EC Act was promulgated, one of the mandates, amongst others, was to promote convergence in the broadcasting signal distribution and telecommunication sector. The postal services sector also was merged as part of ICASA. So the challenges with this convergence, multi-sector or single-sector regulation, some of the sectors are more developed and liberalized than others. So sometimes it becomes a little bit of a challenge. What do you address? And with the current state in the country, we have the issue of trying to balance the historical issues. For example, you might find one regulator is more developed than the other, and you cannot therefore just go and do convergence. You have to look at what are the issues you're trying to address, the issues of whatever that was neglected in the past, like the issues of energy and water. Other countries, for example, they will have a utilities regulator that takes into consideration all the different electricity, water, transport, communication in one regulator. So I just thought, let me mention it there, because when we talk convergence, we're not only looking at the broadcasting and the telecom sector. There are other countries that do beyond that. And moving into a digital space where it's no longer just transport, it's no longer just agriculture, the ICT or the digital technologies, they are actually involved in all of those sectors. So which makes it difficult to actually have the borders clearly. So with the issue of the converged regulator that we have currently, we still have broadcasting licenses, for example. We have the ECNSs. And how converged is it if we still talk broadcasting within this converged environment? And yet we moved the services. They are blurring the lines between broadcasting and telecoms, like we traditionally know those. So like I was saying, the questions are, to what extent has the merged regulator resulted in convergence? And the information regulator that I included earlier on, where do we fit that in with the digital environment? Because the issues of privacy, data protection, etc., etc., it comes to play in a digital environment. Where does it fit in this multi-sector converged environment? The issues of cyber, all of those, if you think about it, there's a lot of those with the digital environment. Also, given the kind of regulator we want to see moving forward, as we're getting into more and more of the digital technology, what kind of a regulator we want? Are we ready for that kind of a regulator to progress through the digital environment? So analyzing the dimensions of regulatory effectiveness. On the left there, I've just put in a few indicators in terms of what do we think would make a regulator effective. Are there legal instruments that give power to the regulator? The issues of independence. Sufficient funding to deliver on the mandate. Sufficient skills, competent staff. Quality of work, level of performance, and the perception by government operators and everybody in the public. With the current status with the regulator we have, the independence is enshrined in the Constitution. The Act that gives ICASA the mandate, the ICASA Act, the EC Act, they do give ICASA the authority. ICASA is dependent on government funding, but limited funding to fulfill the mandate. Limited skills, staff, there's over dependence on consultants. Inability also to implement regulations timelessly. The inability to hold operators to fulfill their mandate and to account. The challenges we have with this environment, there's this issue of unclear legal distinction of the powers of the policymaker and the regulator. The delays in the formulation of policy and policy direction. Limited access to detailed information and technical expertise. There's information asymmetry between the operators and the regulator, which makes it challenging for the regulator to regulate an industry where it doesn't have enough information. There's limited research activities happening at ICASA. ICASA always looks at regulators like Ofcom to benchmark, and yet Ofcom is forever researching. There's always research work that is going on, so that whatever they do, everything is based on facts at least. So when ICASA goes and actually takes whatever that is Ofcom is doing, there's limited research that they do on their side. Protracted litigation by the industry. It makes it difficult for ICASA to implement certain regulations, because if the industry doesn't like what ICASA puts out, there's forever litigation, and it takes forever for ICASA to actually implement anything. Analyzing the institutional structures, I just decided to just pick a few in terms of all the stakeholders in the in this environment. With the constitution that gives the regulator independence, the government that formulates the policies, and government policies, they need to look at addressing the past imbalances. For example, the issues of universality, affordability, and accessibility. Then we have the regulator that has to implement such policies and actually prescribe regulation and monitors and forces compliance in the industry. We have the operators, public and private. Public having to fulfill the mandate of a developmental state. Private building more of the infrastructure and providing those communication services. Those operators, all of public and private, they do contribute towards the Universal Service Access Fund. So the kind of a regulator would want to see as we move into the digital environment, it's a complex multi-sector approach, which is more internet-based, it's web-based. The businesses, they don't have borders in terms of the sectors, they don't have borders, they have a global reach. So the digital environment is going to push ICASA towards a more light-touch self-regulation. What kind of a regulator is that? It needs to be more adaptive. It needs to be flexible enough not to stifle the innovation, but have in mind the issues of universality that we still need to address. The issue of regulatory sandboxes. Coming from an engineering environment, this is not new. It's something that when you have to come up with any new innovation, you have to start with it. We used to have to start with a prototype. Build and test, make sure it works before it comes out. So it's a same concept with the regulatory sandboxes, because the more you give that free space, the more the innovators innovate, the more they take us forward. More of an outcome-based kind of a regulation. No rigidity in terms of what you want to see out there. Risk-weighted kind of a regulation, collaborative regulation, where we need to make sure that ICASA doesn't operate in silos. ICASA doesn't have to only go out to the market when there's a formal regulation out there. ICASA needs to have those collaborations, have academia, informal workshops, where ICASA puts everybody in there, have an idea, throw the idea at everybody to get advice, to get guidance, have all these ideas before we even get to formal regulation. That way it's more of an interactive approach, because the more you want to regulate in a hard way, the more it's difficult to actually regulate the industry. For example, the issue of license exempt, the spectrum common, it's more of a self-regulated environment, because you don't need to have a license for that kind of spectrum. The Wi-Fi that we also love, it's because of the innovation in that kind of an environment. So if we encourage that kind of innovation, we're getting more into new ways of actually getting everybody connected. The issue of RFIDs, all of those, they operate in spectrum that is not licensed. Okay. So moving towards this digital economy kind of regulation, we need to build that capacity. We need the international cooperation, legal measures to actually take care of the exposure of our information to the internet that is global. The technical and procedural measures, industry, if industry is to self-regulate, there needs to be some code in terms of how do we do this as the industry without too much intervention from the regulator. Because as we're delaying this, the technologies are actually blurring the sector borders. Like I was saying, there's no, for example, the transport environment, the agricultural environment, the e-health, e-education, all of those. We need to get to a stage where when we come together to regulate, all of those stakeholders need to have a say, so that the industry doesn't get regulated twice, three times, and by all the different stakeholders. The issue of business is going global, and tax evasion by those who are actually coming, for example, here, or the business coming from another country, coming here, and because maybe it's just an app, it's easier to just evade compliance when it comes to tax issues. All of those, we need to start talking about that. The last slide, analyzing self-regulation versus the co-regulation. With the current environment, there is a little bit of self-regulation happening. For example, the national roaming arrangement, they are more on commercial terms, not much of an involvement from the partner, with the infrastructure sharing as well, in certain instances. Then there is filing of such agreements with the regulator. To regulation or co-regulation, with the current environment, ICASA does the formal processes of consulting the industry, and then industry inputting into the regulation, then the regulator has to enforce compliance. But the challenges are, with the self-regulation environment, it's difficult for ICASA not to get involved on some of these issues, because there's a point beyond which the market will not go to certain areas where it doesn't make business sense for them. So ICASA has to get involved. And unfortunately, with the delays that are happening right now, you realize that some of the agreements that the operators agree on, they render the regulator ineffective. Because what the regulator, for example, is sitting with a spectrum not licensing, there are spectrum arrangements happening with the operators that are making it easy for the operators to move to the next level with or without the regulator having license. So some of those things, the regulator needs to be aware that the longer it takes, the longer, the more they become really ineffective in terms of actually getting the operators to adhere to the obligations or to actually address the issues of universality. So the regulatory environment is not really that enabling, because right now we have 400 plus licenses that would want to have access to spectrum, but there's serious barriers of entry in terms of having to accommodate those. There's no real competition. There's lack of transformation and competitiveness. Infrastructure sharing, like I was saying, is one of the challenges, rendering the regulator ineffective. And the technology is actually advancing at a faster speed. In conclusion, South Africa, we're still using the traditional approaches, not embracing the forward-thinking approaches. And one of the reasons why we have to try and find a balancing approach is because we have to address the issues of universality without actually holding back the progress. So it's a sensitive balancing issue that we need to address. The emerging technologies, they require supportive digital regulation that is supportive of digital economy. And digital environment, it requires a flexible, adaptive regulatory environment. Regulatory impact assessment is a must, because then you make a decision based on effect, without just, so that you limit the possibilities of litigation by the industry. The issue of 100% population broadband connectivity has to be prioritized. One of the last points that I thought we need to put it there, the digital skills training on a nationwide scale is very, very critical. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mikela. I will now allow members to engage with the presentation. Honorable Kubeki.
Thank you, Chair, and also to the presenter who was presenting at that moment, Mayor Liswa. You are welcome. Mayor Liswa, what I want just to ask you is there on the issue of the information memorandum and the policy directive. One of the key objectives of the policy directive of on a high demand spectrum is to promote, to facilitate entry by new players into the market in order to deal with the superstructure of market. Do you believe that the information memorandum published by ICASA facilitates entry by new players? If no, why not? If yes, how does it do so? Thank you, Dad.
Thank you, Honorable Member. The question on the policy direction. There's a slight difference in terms of the policy direction and what came out in the information memorandum. Whilst it's acceptable that ICASA would decide to go the way they've done, but one doesn't have a clear understanding, because it's not explained in the memorandum why there's a slight deviation in terms of what was in the policy direction. I did mention something in my slides, this unclear distinction in terms of the regulator and the policymaker. I think the law is very clear in terms of that. Before I get to the details of the question, it's very clear that ICASA must consider the policy direction. And what does that mean? Because the policy direction takes into consideration the policy goals of the country. And therefore, whatever that comes out there, it needs to be considered. And if there's a deviation, there needs to be some kind of an explanation. And the law is also clear that when the minister and the regulator are dealing with the policy issues, there needs to be some kind of a consultation. So that by the time the regulation comes on the ICASA side, there has been enough consultation between the two. So it shouldn't be a question of now there's a deviation. Coming to the issue of information memorandum, I think in a way, because ICASA came up with different options, so some of those options don't make sense. Some might actually do something for the smaller players. But I think for me it was a question of why is it that ICASA is treating this as if now this new network that's gonna be competing building the network, it's as if it's on the same par as the current operator. And yet it's going to be on the wholesale side. There's going to be retailers that are using this network. And the current operators, they already have spectrum that they're currently using, which they refarm as and when the spectrum crunch. So in a way, it will address, because the issue may be, it's not a question of the competition is not enough. Maybe there's no competitiveness with the current operator, because there's only so many operators that the country will be able to handle in the market. But with the smaller operators, I think it's a question of, I don't think they want to compete at the level of Vodafone or MTN. But I mean, to have their localized network that builds businesses like that. So there's quite a number of things that are raised in the information memorandum which are a little bit of a contradiction. Like the MVNO, for example, that's forcing the operators to have that. And yet this new network also needs to have the MVNO. So some of those, you're just not sure how that is going to work.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ms. Yolisa, for your presentation. As you were presenting, I think you have raised the issue of litigation. There's a high level of litigation. Perhaps if you can explain to us, because I had a lot of issues with this, that in the past financial year, ICASA had a lot of litigation. So I wanted you to maybe explain to us what can ICASA maybe do better to make sure that at least when it comes to litigation. The second point was, I see that also you are talking about lack of transformation. Why is the lack of transformation? And then there's also a view that the regulator is too weak. It lacks capacity. What is your view to that rebuttal?
I think starting with the question on litigation, the challenge with the status quo, like I mentioned, there's a lack of regulatory impact assessment within ICASA. Because when you make decisions, at least if your decisions are fact-based, you are in a better position to actually give reasons why you're doing this So without having done any of that, you just come out with a regulation, you're saying you want to introduce this, and there's no real reason why, or it's never been proven to actually work what you're trying to come up with. Surely the operators will, because the operators have the technical capabilities. They research, they consult. So surely, if ICASA is lacking in terms of that, they will forever be on the back foot. Because another thing, the operators, they have information that is not easily accessible to the regulator. They have technical expertise that ICASA doesn't have. For example, how does the regulator, how does the regulator regulate telecoms network access or access to high sites or those kind of technical environments if they don't have a clue what goes on? So there could be that they have the information or maybe the technical expertise, but maybe they don't keep up to the latest developments in that space. But it's one of the issues, the technical expertise between the regulator and the operator. It's not on the same level. And also the issue of information. ICASA doesn't have the level of information that they require to actually regulate that industry. That is my view. On the issue of transformation, I think the challenges with the current structure is such that it's the big operators that are the industry. The smaller operators who would want to participate, they find it difficult to actually do that because the spectrum that everybody wants to have access to is not available. The spectrum that was available in the past is only limited to what is already licensed to the current operators. So it's difficult for the upcoming, like SMEs, to actually play into that space because there's nothing for them at this stage. And everything has almost like been put on hold. Oh, it's not happening for the past 10 years. So it's a difficult issue. I think I've already touched on the issue of lack of capacity when I was trying to explain the litigation. So if there's not enough technical expertise for ICASA to understand what they need to regulate, and then they come up with a regulation that's forcing the operator to do something, obviously the operator is going to take them to court because they know better in their environment.
My last question is, I see that you have worked for ICASA. I was hoping maybe when you were doing it was actually that you would touch on that. Maybe if you can just give us a background, what was your responsibility there?
Thank you, ma'am. I actually started with SADRA back in the day. In the engineering environment, at the time we were busy, responsible for the migration. There was a lot of migration that we were busy with at the time, moving these services, opening up for the mobile environment. I went back to ICASA around 2008. I was a spectrum licensing manager at the time. So we were issuing licenses for the whole range of spectrum, not necessarily the spectrum that we all talk about, that and everything else. So we're issuing those licenses.
Honorable Sandra.
Assuming Ms. Guba or Mrs. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm looking at the Mrs. Geta. If there's one thing you'd like to achieve at ICASA, what would it be? Something different, something new. What's new and innovative? Because I see in your CV, right, that you're innovative. What new and innovative ideas would you like to implement at ICASA?
Thank you, ma'am. For me, I think you might have seen also, I like the research environment a bit, not a lot. I'm still trying to get my way around it. But I think for me, to get the issue of impact assessment to be a norm, if it has, not to be just something we get to hear about. Because you can decide to do the impact assessment before or after. And in this instance, or in so many instances, I think it's very important to do it before.
Innovative.
Oh.
Impact assessment is not innovative.
Something innovative. Okay. No, I can't think of anything as of this stage, because I think you caught me. I'm not sure whether innovative more on the technical side, the technological side, or because in a regulatory environment, especially at the board level, you will have the technical expertise from the staff. And then you need to give a strategic direction in terms of where do you think the regulator should go in terms of being the regulator of this digital era.
Have you heard of ICASA possibly merging with other entities? Do you know what those entities are and what do you think of that merger? And don't you think if that merger happens, that would require some innovative thinking? I mean, we are in the middle of a digital revolution, and we can't have an ICASA that is slow and to move and takes forever to do what it's supposed to be doing. We need fast and nimble, and an ICASA that can keep up with the fast-paced digital world. So that's why I was asking for innovative ideas. Because I think those are the kind of people that need to be on the ICASA council, people that can say, we need to do this different, because we can't have that traditional type of thinking. We need to think out of the box. So that's why I was asking the question. I'm just explaining why I asked that question. And maybe you've had a bit of time to, because you're the one who wrote in your CV, you know, that your interest is innovation. And innovation is about, you know, new ideas, new. I don't want to limit you and say only tech, anything really, to change the way ICASA does its business.
Thank you, ma'am. I think in my slides, I did mention the issue of the kind of ICASA we would like to see, the kind of ICASA that talks to the digital environment, and that kind of a, maybe before I move on, going back to the issue of ICASA merging with which other institutions. I think from an ICASA point of view, I think there's quite a number of entities that ICASA could merge with. I did mention, for example, the issue of the information regulator. It's a question that I feel I may not be sitting here having the answer to that, but those are the discussions we need to have for the kind of ICASA we want to see in the future.
I know that there has been a proposal to merge ICASA with other entities.
Yes.
What do you think of that?
for a digital environment, the .za kind of an environment, for example, we're moving into an internet-based kind of an environment. It may not be a bad idea, but without having done any real work to understand exactly what are the elements of commonality that would make it practical to have that measure, reasonable or even effective.
Do you think there might be any constitutional implications of that merger?
I don't know at this stage. With the issues of the internet environment, it's a
I think because ECASA
it's a global environment. It's not necessarily a localized environment. So it's definitely there could be issues that we need to look into.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Mrs. Ketama. How do you think would ICASA stand in its role in trying to ensure that fair practice prevails over unfair competition in the market?
I want to be clear. I want to be sure that I've understood you correctly.
How do you think would ICASA strengthen its role in trying to ensure the fair practice prevails over unfair competition in the market, with your own understanding of the data service market inquiry report?
Okay, thank you, ma'am. I think the ICASA's responsibility, in as far as the competition is concerned, there's a Chapter 10, for example, a process that ICASA needs to follow before actually, because ICASA cannot just regulate the pricing environment without having followed the process, because it's different, for example, with the Competition Commission, because ICASA is guided. There's a framework that ICASA needs to follow, and they've done it before. In fact, with all the other regulations that ICASA prescribes, it's always been my view that if ICASA were to follow all of those that are at their exposure, follow that to the T like they've done in the past with the call termination rates, they would be in a better position to actually strengthen their position in actually dealing with all of these issues, including the data issue, data pricing issue. So following those processes to the T, I think for me it's the only way that ICASA will be able to minimize being taken to court because there's a gap somewhere in whatever that they've been practicing.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good afternoon, ma'am, Ketam. I hope I pronounced it properly so that I'm not sued. Ketama. Yes. Ma'am, I'm going to focus on what you presented. I'm not going to ask you anything outside what you said. And I've been listening very carefully. In your broad assessment, ICASA has got no capacity either on research, it's got no funding, it's limited research activity, protracted litigation, and where I'm sitting, you are applying to be part of a crisis, if you like. You are applying to get into a home. But in all these good things that you said, and I'm not saying you are incorrect, your presentation was wrong. All these things that you raised, I think you are very correct. You can't regulate when you have not researched about the market and everything else. But what is lacking is what are the innovative ways of strengthening that institution before you could even get there? What would you be your proposals, particularly on the challenges that you raise? For instance, on convergence, you said your view, can you give us your views on convergence and considering all these challenges that you are raising? And I think Honorable Van Damme touched partly on it. And maybe the last question will relate to the new players. Because everybody says bring the new players, universal access, it's okay. That's a very nice phrase and I like them. But in reality, the former president of is it Kenya once asked, well, how do you take a lightweight boxer and let him fight with a heavyweight? I'm just asking that so that we can together be creative. You are expecting an ordinary innovator at the lowest level with little resources to compete with a heavyweight and a giant, the person who's literally owning and monopolizing the market. How is that possible in your view? Yes, we are talking about, we want that universal access. Everybody wants that. The only option that I had today was somebody was saying maybe we should force these big operators to partner them for a certain period. Whether that will work, I don't know, but can you present your side of the view in relation to that? Thanks, Chair.
I think, let me start with the issue of the new players. I don't think the new players can necessarily compete at the level of these new these big players. I think it's almost impossible at this stage. But I think the new players, they are more, if they are more disruptive in what they bring into this space, I think they have a better option of actually disrupting the comfort zone and the status quo of the current big players. So it's not a question of them coming and competing at that level. I think for me, it's a question of they must get in and find the niche for those businesses. The unfortunate thing is the innovators, they get bought by the big players. So how do we actually make sure that we don't allow them to be just bought once they come up with an innovation? I think it's a question of what can we put in place to actually protect those smaller operators, not to be just taken out of the market by the big player, but allow them to be disruptors in the way they do things, but not to literally compete with the big player. Find their own space and actually make the space work. So you were saying me getting to ICASA, and I've mentioned all of these challenges. I think it's not a question of seeing all these challenges and nothing could be done about them. It's a question of, is there willingness to actually change the status quo? Because as much as there's limited skilled staff, how do you make the limited skilled staff more effective? What are the things that could be done to actually take them to the next level, to be able to challenge the status quo, to change, to challenge the bigger operators? It's a pity that, for example, I can't really get into the details of an example I want to make, but there are instances where, because of this asymmetry in terms of the information, you know, when you're sitting on the other side, not within ICASA, you look at how ICASA approaches certain things. You understand? With the information already, the legislative framework for them to be able to actually challenge how the operators do certain things, it's there with them, and yet they sometimes are unable to actually get to the bottom of it and actually put their foot down and say, no, this is how we're doing this and this is how we're not doing this. It's an unfortunate situation, but it does happen. You sit and you listen to the arguments when ICASA is being challenged on anything that ICASA is doing. And here are all the tools to actually fight and challenge. So the question of the protracted litigation, some of those could be minimized or limited just by using the tools that are there at this moment. And the upskilling of the staff, I don't know how much of that is happening because I'm not in that environment, but learning needs to be a continuous thing. Otherwise, there's no way ICASA can keep up with this, with its staff.
Chair, I think just on a lighter follow-up, the last issue that you raised was around the OTT services that are coming to the country. They are not being regulated. And if we were to appoint you in ICASA, what would be the best way of managing? Because you yourself said this technology now is not, it's outside of the borders of individual state, which by implication says it's beyond the interest of the public, in this case of South Africa. Now, how do we ensure that our people are taken on board, even if it's a global thing, everybody else in the world is doing it, but how do we ensure that our people are also part of that global, because it's exclusive, it means it's for those who can access it. And then how do we ensure that using that regulatory body, our people also get closer to where things are happening? And particularly I need a response on this OTT services, on how you think we can manage or regulate or have them pay some taxes because they are using our services anyway for free. Thanks. Even if it's their technology, but they are using our people as their services, so they are not paying tax.
It's a challenging one, because I think to get to that level of the OTTs in this country is the way things are currently. We have an issue of limited connectivity to begin with. It's not yet universal. It's not everybody that can access the internet. Yeah, like in terms of reach, And secondly, in terms of pricing. The pricing, in as far as the devices themselves and the data environment. So I think before we even could get into the innovative side of things, we need to address the issue of universality, getting access to everybody. Because when we have access to everybody, we are in a better position to actually have in those rural communities what we call the digital hub, for example. Because right now, we used to have the so-called telecenters, which were not really making much of a difference. But we've seen that with the digital innovation hub, they are more successful. So if we have the reach, universal reach, then we are able to actually bring the people on board and actually start teaching them how to use this internet environment, how to come up with these apps that we use on a daily basis, how to use those apps to actually come up with some of the solutions for the local environment. I think it's the issue of us trying to regulate. Or let me just put it like this. I think it's, we should not always jump into regulating whenever there's an innovative, there's new innovation. I think we need to check what's the issue, what's the, in as far as the public concern, public safety, all of those, we need to investigate that. So that by the time we decide to regulate, we know the impact of these on the general public.
Honorable Secretary, to answer the question.
I apologize that when you started, I had ran away because of the aircon. It was making me sick, so I couldn't get the representation. I do have one question, and hopefully it will remain one. If all broadcasting were to happen online, would we still need ICASA? If so, how would it regulate? I'm sure you understand the significance of this question. I don't have to foreground it. And it's not true that the over-the-top products or programs are only from outside. There are many OTT services here in South Africa. So having said that, my original question is, of course, will we still need ICASA? If so, in what form? This gives you an opportunity to sort of tell us whether your thinking is part of the future or not.
Thank you, sir. I think you might have misunderstood me on the OTTs. I think, or maybe if I did say, I didn't mean to say it's coming from outside only. But coming to your question, the question of ICASA's validity if every broadcasting service is online, I think the form and shape of ICASA would have to change, because it's more internet-based kind of an environment. So I think the issues of focus, if you think about it, the information regulator, that I was trying to touch on earlier on, I think becomes important in this, in looking at where ICASA would be if the information regulator is now part of this digital environment. I think the shape and form would change in as far as what would be ICASA regulating, because mainly ICASA regulates more on the infrastructure side. So now, with the application, it's the issue of privacy, data protection, the cyber security. I think then it's a question of, would ICASA be ICASA, or would ICASA be something else that takes care of some of these things? The content, do we want to regulate the content? Why, at what level? So I think, for me, ICASA would not be the ICASA we know today. It would have to change into a different form.
Okay. The trouble we're having the whole day is people who don't answer questions. Like, in a very direct way. Like, you are now in the, you are trying to be a counselor. But tell me what shape or what new body and what would be its power. At the moment, with radio and television getting licenses, you know, you can withdraw a license. There are implications that you can make. That's why you are a regulator. You've got some power. But if I'm operating on the internet, that seems to me the fundamental challenge. If all broadcasting were to move online, what would be the implications? In what way would ICASA evolve? You get what I mean?
I think I do get you. But I think the challenge is you expect you dissolve ICASA, and that's it. But you can't just think you can dissolve ICASA without...
No, I'm saying in what way it would evolve.
Okay. As I was saying, ICASA regulates more on the infrastructure side. So it would have to be now at a different level. And it's soft issues that ICASA will have to look into, not necessarily the issues of licenses and whatnot, and the infrastructure, the spectrum, all of that. So ICASA would not be the ICASA we see and we know. Maybe it will just be a small-scale regulator encompassing different environments.
So you don't know how it would evolve. I think you must think about that question, because in less than a decade, these next councillors have to answer it. That's the major question you councillors who are new, if you make it, have to answer in a very direct and succinct way. Don't you agree?
I believe once we know how it's going, once we've done our work in terms of the future ICASA, then we'll be in a better position to give you a straight yes and no.
Okay, let me put a technical difference. At the moment, the only, for television, the only reason really that they still like power to the cable, ordinary television as we know it, is live television, like news and sports. Everything else can possibly be watched online. And slowly, even those entities which are like news and sports, which are live, like on the scene. What if everything moved online? If people watched news on the internet, that's no one's country. what would be the basic aspects of the regulatory framework on those bases if the world of South Africa were to become completely Showmax and we watch the Derby on Showmax, everything on Showmax, or some online program? What would be the basic aspects of the regulatory framework that ICASA would have to invent or, you know, evolve into?
Okay. I don't want to give you the yes and the no answer, but I can tell you in the future, ICASA might not exist in the form that it is currently. Yes, because I mean, you can't know beforehand how you want to have ICASA looking like. Because you go to move from the network environment into the application. Like I was saying, you need to move now into what you want to protect the public from. Privacy, are those important? The issues of protecting your keys, the issues of protecting your data information, those are the things that will be key moving forward.
Maybe just to take you back, every time you spoke about the new players, I reduced them to the level of localized interest and so forth. They shouldn't be competing at the level of your big players, which then brings the point about one. Whether you see, I'm saying in your view, not what goes wrong, in your view, whether you see what I'm making it in that setup, especially as you raise the problem we have with nuclear, that's one. Second thing relates to the national roaming arrangement, which you said is left to self-regulation as compared to an intervention by ICASA. Is that working, and if not working, what regulatory intervention can be there to protect especially those that I knew who have not invested in the infrastructure? So those are the two questions.
Okay.
I think the issue of the one is coming at a very late stage then. Because I think it has been delayed for too long. And the one, I think the way it's structured currently, it's not meant to be operating at the retail level. It's supposed to be a wholesaler that's going to build the network, and then the smaller players will use that infrastructure. Smaller players and everybody else will actually use the infrastructure. So it's a question, I think for me it's a question of timing, number one. Number two, can it really, how much space is there still for the one to actually be competitive? I think more in the areas where the big operators would not want to go, there might still be space, but how do we ensure that it's more viable instead of just having the one that will actually struggle be in business. So it's a long list of things we need to make sure we use to protect, or at least when we formulate the one. We need to take care of certain things, maybe even the current infrastructure. How do we ensure that the one has access to that, to actually build quicker? How do we involve the government infrastructure, maybe without government being involved, but it's a question of how do we want the one to be private owned or public owned? And if so, what role do all the players play in actually making the one more viable? Issues of licenses. Do we give it a break so that at least it can build the business? We don't have a business model at this stage of how the one will look like. So, as I was saying, the one will be more of a wholesaler, but the smaller operators will have to get access. And the current version of the one is that the bigger operators not buy capacity from the one to have those kind of entertainment to make it more successful. On the issue of the national roaming, I think the current arrangement have changed a bit compared to the way they used to be. But the issues of pricing, it doesn't really help the smaller players to actually be competitive. Because the smaller players are dependent on those that have more of a national coverage to roam. So from a competitiveness point of view, it makes it difficult for the smaller ones to be competitive. Because if the big the players that have national reach, they make it impossible through pricing. Then it's not easy for these ones, the smaller ones, to be effective. So without any regulatory intervention in making sure that the price structure is competitive, it's difficult for the smaller players to be competitive. So there needs to be some kind of regulatory intervention to make sure that ICASA understands what goes into those arrangements. Because the smaller players will forever be complaining. And like I was saying, I think they've changed a bit now. But in the past, even the issue of quality. There are calls when you move from one network to the other. Those used to be serious issues. But without the detailed analysis of what the current arrangements are about, one is not able to say they will work or they won't work, but they have not worked in the past. And the cost-based pricing that ICASA wants to introduce, that might give ICASA some kind of an idea if they get involved in understanding what is going on.
Okay, thank you. I take it that the members that have engaged with you have now come to that end point. That gives you an opportunity to thank you for making time today. If you've got last question to me.
Okay. I think just one thing from my side. The issue of rural connectivity for me it's so critical. You know, I spent some time last year in one of the rural townships. It's a township, they don't have water. Right now, I think it's been more than 5 or 6 months. They struggle with electricity. It's a very poor environment. But I was going to the school trying to encourage kids to go and do math and science from grade 9. When I asked them, what are the challenges they are facing? They said connectivity. Out of everything else. And I believe if ICASA is in a better position to actually make that happen, we are in a better position to actually improve more than just having connectivity.
As I said, then interact with the support staff in relation to the administrative matters. The others from our side will thank you.